RTE News at 1 on Radio 1. I'm Gavin Jennings. Good afternoon. The lunchtime headlines on Tuesday, the 2nd of April. Simon Coveney has announced that he will step down as minister when the Dáil resumes next week. A US-based charity has blamed Israel for a strike that killed seven of its staff delivering food supplies in Gaza. And a 12-year-old child has been detained after a fatal shooting at a school in Finland, in which a 12-year-old was killed and two others seriously injured. The news is read by Brian Jennings.
The Minister for Enterprise, Simon Coveney, has announced that he will step down from Cabinet next week. Mr. Coveney said he did not know whether he would have been asked to be in Simon Harris's cabinet, but it would make life easier for the new party leader if he stepped down. He indicated he was undecided about running again in the next general election. Our political reporter Sandra Hurley.
Speculation about Simon Coveney's future has been rife since Simon Harris took over as Fine Gael leader. Today, the Cork South Central TD announced he will step down from cabinet next week in order to give the new leader space to renew the party by promoting new people. Mr. Coveney has been a senior minister for 13 years in agriculture, defence, housing, foreign affairs and enterprise. His departure means there will be two vacancies in cabinet, allowing Simon Harris more space to refresh the frontline team. Simon Coveney was less clear about whether he would run again in the next election, saying that was not a decision for this week and he would consider it further over the summer.
Israel has said an independent body will investigate the deaths of seven aid workers in Gaza, which the US-based charity World Central Kitchen said was the result of an Israeli airstrike. There's been widespread international condemnation of the incident. The Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs Micheál Martin, said he's appalled by the deaths of humanitarian workers who were killed providing life-saving aid to the people of Gaza. And he said full accountability is needed. Citizens from the UK, Australia and Poland were among those killed. An Israeli army spokesperson, Daniel Hagari, said Israel had expressed its condolences to the charity on the loss of life.
We are committed to examining our operations thoroughly and transparently. I just spoke to WCK founder Chef Jose Anders and expressed the deepest condolences of Israel Defense Forces to the families and the entire World Central Kitchen family. We have been reviewing the incident in the highest levels to understand the circumstances of what happened and how it happened. We will be opening a probe to examine this serious incident further. This will help us reduce the risk of such an event from occurring again.
A 12-year-old child has been killed and two others seriously injured in a school shooting in Finland. The suspected shooter, also aged 12, fled the scene, but was detained close to the scene a short time later. Police say the suspect admitted to the shooting and had a handgun belonging to a close relative. The shooting happened at a school in a suburb of Helsinki. The country's Prime Minister, Petteri Orpo, said the shooting was deeply shocking. Police Inspector Tommy Salasiria said police were on the scene quickly.
Police immediately entered into the school area and started to look for the suspect and started as well the first aid and found out that at least three people injured. One of the victims died almost immediately at this location in the school, and two other victims were transported to the hospital in Helsinki.
The latest estimate of inflation in Ireland over the 12 months to March says prices increased by 1.7%. The estimate comes from the CSO as part of the monthly EU Harmonised Index of Consumer Prices. Our Agriculture and Consumer Affairs correspondent Joe McGrailey.
Having soared close to 10% in 2022, inflation in Ireland has been steadily falling, and the latest estimate from the CSO puts inflation here at 1.7% in the 12 months to March. A big contributor to the reduction was a drop in energy prices, down 8.4% in the year and 3.1% between February and March. However, despite keen competition in the grocery sector, food prices actually increased in the 12-month period, rising by 2.6%. These figures were compiled as part of the EU Harmonised Index of Consumer Prices and do not include items such as mortgage interest payments, which are included in the monthly Consumer Price Index, the official measure of inflation in Ireland.
And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant for highly efficient, sustainable home heating for your new build. Choose Grant's A++ rated Airona heat pump. Visit grant.ie.
This afternoon will start off mainly dry with sunny spells. However, cloud will increase from the south with rain in southern coastal areas. The rain will move up over much of the southern half of the country this evening. Highest temperatures, 9 to 12 degrees, with moderate southeast breezes developing. Gavin.
Thanks, Brian. And still to come on the news at 1, Simon says, leave me out. Reaction to Minister Coveney's exit from government and what now for Team Harris. Also, a school shooting in Finland, children with petrol bombs in Derry, a very wet March and a very chocolatey Easter.
With so many conflicting views on electric vehicles, it's hard to get time to work out what's right or wrong. At Kia, we want to give you that time, 48 hours. Register for your Kia EV 48-hour test drive and take time to experience electric vehicle driving. Time to understand Kia's rapid charging capabilities and time to see how the savings really stack up. With 48 hours, you'll have all the time you need to come to the right decision for you. To register, visit kia.com. Terms and conditions apply. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Fancy cheaper bills? Switch to Bord Gáis Energy today and you could save up to €616 a year with our best electricity and gas offer, exclusively online. Don't miss out. This offer ends April 30th. Switch online today at bordgáisenergy.ie.
Estimated annual bill of €2,608. Discount offer standard unit rates for 12 months with paperless bills and direct debit. Savings against our standard rates with no discount. See borgoshenergy.ie for prices and full T's and C's.
Welcome back. You're with the news at 1. As you've been hearing, Simon Coveney says he will step down from government next week. That he told his new party leader last night that he doesn't want to be part of the next cabinet because he says he wants to give the incoming Taoiseach space to create new opportunities and that he hasn't decided if he'll run in the next general election. He's been a minister in Fine Gael governments for 13 years in enterprise, trade and employment, defence, foreign affairs, housing and agriculture. Simon Harris is expected to be elected Taoiseach when the Dáil resumes next week, after Leo Varadkar resigned last month, citing personal and political reasons. Simon Coveney has been speaking to our Southern editor, Pascal Sheehy.
So look, I haven't made any decision in relation to the next general election, whether I'm going to run or not. I'll make that decision over the summer with colleagues and friends and people in my own constituency. Today isn't really about that. It's about Fine Gael and the decisions that Simon Harris has to make in the coming days and the build-up to our Ardesh. And I think that, I hope anyway, that the decision I've made makes his decisions a little bit easier and a bit clearer.
That's Simon Coveney speaking to our Southern editor, Pascal Sheehy, and Pascal is with us now. Is this a surprise, Pascal?
I think Simon Coveney might argue that it is a surprise and a shock announcement, but I think for anybody who is keeping a close eye on this constituency, one of the most competitive constituencies in the whole country with three senior ministers here, I don't think anybody who is keeping a close eye on the constituency here would view it as that much of a surprise, to be perfectly honest with you, Gavin.
It might come as a surprise to those who heard him at the recent Fine Gael selection convention when he seemed to indicate that he wanted to stay on, Pascal. And yet, for those listening to his explanation on Radio 1 earlier today, it wasn't entirely clear why he had changed his mind.
No, and in fact, prior to that Fine Gael selection convention last Sunday week, I had spoken to him and interviewed him 2 days previously, and he was equally adamant at that stage, not only that he would be running for Fine Gael in Cork South Central at the next general election, but also of his hopes that he would be in Simon Harris's first cabinet. But like all TDs in a position like that, he appreciated that it was for Simon Harris to choose his own ministers, but he certainly expressed a hope at that stage last Friday week that he would be in Simon Harris's cabinet. So what changed in the meantime? Well, immediately on Simon Harris's candidacy, I don't even think that we had to wait for Simon Harris to be appointed leader of Fine Gael. Immediately, there was speculation that the person at most risk in cabinet of losing their seat at the cabinet table was Simon Coveney. I think perhaps he has reflected on that. He did say himself this morning that by him taking the decision, he was making life easier for Simon Harris, and there is certainly that to be said in his favour as well. But I also think perhaps there may have been an element of looking at the writing on the wall and going before the decision was made for him.
Yes, what's not clear from his interview this morning was whether he wanted to be a part of the cabinet or whether Simon Harris wanted him to be part of the cabinet.
I think the fairest way to put it would be that there may have been an element of both those positions involved.
Tell us about the reaction in Cork today.
Well, the reaction, I'm in Carrigaline here and we have spoken to people here in the last hour. It is overwhelmingly positive. He is a popular, visible politician on the streets of the constituency and on the streets of Carrigaline. Now, he did move house outside of the constituency to Cork East, to Cove and the Great Island and Cork Harbour around about 12 months or so ago, and at that stage there was speculation as to his position with regard to running as a TD or running in the next general election. He would say that his new home in Cove is 5 minutes across the water in a ferry from his current base here in Carrigaline, and it's not really that far, and it doesn't make a huge pile of difference if he is resident in the constituency or 5 minutes by ferry outside of the constituency, and that is a fair point. But there has been speculation for some time now that not only would he be stepping back from the cabinet table, but perhaps that he would not be a candidate for Fine Gael at the next general election. And he did nothing to shut down that speculation today. He says that's not a question that he for today, that he will not address the question today.
And tell us about some of the people who've been speaking to you today.
Yes, so we have been speaking to people here in Carrigaline. They had about an hour or two to digest the news when I was speaking to them. And as I say, and perhaps not unexpectedly, the reaction was overwhelmingly positive in relation to Simon Coveney.
I can't believe it, really and truly. We really are in changing time, aren't we? With the Leo going and everything. But it was a shock, actually. And nobody thought that was going to happen, you know, really and truly.
Yeah. Would you have been a supporter of Simon Coveney?
I would. In general, he kept a very steady ship. He was just a very good pair of hands at the tiller, definitely.
It'll be a shock, I said, particularly to a lot of people. But I think it was on the cards for a while, particularly when he moved his residence address from Cork South Central to East Cork. He will be lost to the party.
And he was 13 years as a minister. How do you think he will be remembered as a minister in the constituency?
Particularly with his dealings with the North of Ireland, his dealings with Brexit. He stood very, very firm for Ireland's corner. Getting stuff in the getting material and infrastructure in the Cork area. Like with having basically three ministers sitting in Cork South Central, I have to say, there could have been a lot more done.
There was rumblings, but I didn't expect him to do it. But they seem to be dropping like flies from Fine Gael at the moment. So I'm just wondering, is there something else going on? They just seem to be a party in turmoil at the moment.
And how do you think he's going to be remembered here in Carrigaline?
Well, he's quite visual around the place and he has done a lot. He was very good with Brexit negotiations. He'll be missed, I suppose.
Very shocked, really, and I think he's going to be a big loss. He's very, very steady, very, very good minister. Yeah, very sad to hear it.
And would you have counted yourself as a supporter?
Yes, I would. Anybody that I've spoken to always comment on what hard-working, conscientious, good man, gentleman.
And do you think he should run as a TD for Cork South Central next time round, even if he's not in Cabinet?
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. I hope it's not the end of his political career, you know. But look, it's a very tough job being in politics these days.
People in Cork with our Southern editor, Pascal Sheehy. Pascal's still with us. One of those questions you asked to people there, Pascal, his legacy, how will he be remembered as a minister in Cork?
Well, first of all, he had huge experience of different positions around the cabinet table. I think in particular his time as Minister for Foreign Affairs stands out at a very sensitive time in the Brexit negotiations. He proved himself to be a safe pair of hands during that time. As against that, he was Minister for Defence, and the naval base in Hall Boland in Cork is at the centre of his Cork South Central constituency. Numbers continue to fall there. Members of the Defence Forces and the Naval Service during his time as Minister for Defence. And on a local level, he made several commitments in relation to the events centre and the delivery of an events centre in Cork. But there has been little or no movement there in a long, long time now. I suppose you could say there will the reaction in terms of legacy will be a mixed one.
Pascal, thank you. That's our Southern editor, Pascal Sheehy. For more on this, let's speak now to Professor Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at Dublin City University. Gary Murphy, good afternoon to you. What do you make of all this?
Hi, Gavin. I think Simon Coveney probably saw the writing on the wall with his presumed exit from Cabinet. I think it would have been a mistake for Simon Harris to only have replaced Leo Varadkar. It would have been too minimalist a reshuffle. In that context, the fact that Simon Coveney has been the longest-serving member alongside Mr. Varadkar, 13 years, which is longest for any Fine Gael TD to serve in Cabinet, made him maybe the obvious person to be removed by Simon Harris. And in that context, I think he has made the decision for the Taoiseach in waiting.
Where does this leave Fine Gael in Cork?
I don't think it makes any difference to Fine Gael in Cork, because Cork has been a bit of a wasteland for Fine Gael over the past decade. I was interested listening to the Vox Pop. Fine Gael haven't done very well in Cork at all. They have no seat in Cork South West, the great Michael Collins, Heartland. Jerry Buttermore lost the second seat in Cork South Central in 2016, and there is no sign, I think, of that seat ever coming back. Will Fine Gael hold a seat in Cork South Central if Simon Coveney doesn't run? I expect they would, but I certainly wouldn't be putting any significant money on it either. The party is in quite a lot of difficulty, as one of the people in the Vox Pop said. And on a personal note, I think Simon Coveney was conscientious, hardworking, a man who did put public service to the fore. But I think Fine Gael is in difficulty, certainly not just simply in Cork, but across the country.
Two vacancies at least now in Cabinet for Simon Harris to fill. Fionnán Sheehan was telling RT Radio earlier that Peter Burke is nailed on to get one of them. What do you think?
Yes, that would seem to be the case. And it was interesting that Peter Burke was on This Week programme last Sunday in advance of Simon Harris winning that Fine Gael leadership, getting the nomination. And I took that as a sign that he probably will be in Cabinet. So I would agree with Fionnán Sheehan on that front. And then I think with Mr. Coveney going now, Simon Harris faces a big decision in relation to the second seat at Cabinet, because there's a lot of talk about Cork and about a no minister in Munster or in Connacht, for that matter. So the people in the running might be Hildegard Nocton in Connacht, or might be Kieran O'Donnell, or maybe more so Patrick O'Donovan in Limerick. But the fact that Fine Gael had a minister in Cork, as I said, never really did very much for them politically or electorally. So perhaps Simon Harris should simply appoint the best person, as distinct from looking at geography. And in that front, I think a lot of talk will be focused on Jennifer Carroll McNeill, the impressive first-time TD from Dunleary, and perhaps Neil Richmond. But I think there might be gender issues. But yeah, I think Simon Harris, with 9 to 11 months to a general election, he needs his best team around him, not to worry too much about geography.
In brief, does that mean that the other Fine Gael senior ministers are safe now?
I think so. I'd like losing our, with Mr. Radke and Mr. Kovnig on, that is a third of the Fine Gael seats changing. So I think that, and who would, I think, have been the minimum we would have expected Simon Harris to do. So I think that does mean everybody else is safe, but it doesn't negate the fact that these are difficult times for Fine Gael.
Gary Murphy, Professor Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics with DCU, thank you for speaking with us. Now let's move on to other news, and news that will come as a little surprise to many. Last month was one of the wettest Marches on record here. Climate figures due to be published by Met Aaron tomorrow will confirm that while the month just gone was not quite as wet as March of last year, some areas had rainfall over 200% above normal. Sunshine values were also above average. Met Aaron climatologist Paul Moore has been telling us more.
March for the whole country of Ireland saw 145% of its long-term average rainfall. Most of the rain was concentrated in the southern half of the country, so the south and east especially, whereas the northwest, some stations in the northwest actually had just slightly below average rainfall for March. But the south and the east especially.
And this was one of the wettest Marches ever, yes?
Provisional data has shown it's in the top 10 wettest anyway, but what's different, last March was actually the wettest March on record, March 2023. What's different this year compared to last year is, with February 2023 was a very dry month, whereas February this year was also very wet. So we're coming off a wet winter into the wet beginning of spring as well.
So for anybody who is farming, who is trying to inspect a pitch, they will know that the ground was very wet this March then as a result.
Yeah, it's been waterlogged across the country pretty much through the winter, and we've had basically above average rainfall all the way back till June last year. It's been mostly above average rainfall, so it's been waterlogged pretty much since then. So if we look at kind of individual stations, Dublin Airport had 219% of its long-term average for March, Phoenix Park 211%, and Valencia Observatory down in Kerry had 193% of its long-term average. That's the wettest March there since 1963. So basically across the country it's remained waterlogged, plus the sunshine values have been below average for March, so there has been less drying than there would normally be too.
Was it colder than most Marches?
No, it was actually above average temperatures. Most stations, all stations actually had above average long-term average temperatures. It may not have felt that way because maybe the sunshine wasn't that high, but yeah, the temperatures have actually been above average for March.
So a little warmer and a lot wetter. This isn't exceptional, though. This seems to be a pattern for this time of the year. Would that be right?
It's a similar pattern to the March last year, where the jet stream was kind of displaced to the south a little bit, sending the low pressures in directly into us, or just to the south of us, bringing a lot of the rain to the south and east of the country. So the pattern this March is very similar to the pattern last March, for sure, yeah.
But as a pattern for springtime over recent years, is it indicative of a climate change that is seeing us get warmer and wetter springtimes?
I wouldn't say it's a pattern for climate change for spring, but what we have seen over the last year is that the sea surface temperatures over the North Atlantic have been at record high levels now for over a year. So this adds a lot more moisture into the atmosphere and a lot more warmth as well. So if we do get a setup where the low pressures to our south or southwest and sending weather fronts in from the Atlantic, they will likely drop more rain because there is more moisture available in the atmosphere.
Does what we've experienced in March give us any indication of what we can expect this month?
Not necessarily. It does look like staying unsettled for the next week at least. But beyond that, it's too early to say.
That's Paul Moore from Met Aaron. A 12-year-old child has died and two other 12-year-olds have been seriously wounded in a shooting at a school in Finland. A suspect, also aged 12, has been detained. Parents told Finnish media that the shooting had taken place in a classroom at Viritola School in Vantaa, to the north of the capital, Helsinki. Satu Helen is a journalist with YLE Media based in Helsinki. Satu, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Can you tell me what happened?
Well, what we know so far is police was alerted at the school right after 9 a.m. in this morning. And as you said, now we know that there are three victims, one who has died and two are in critical condition at the hospital. And the thing that makes this so devastating, one of the things is the age of a shooter and the victims, who all are only 12 years old. The shooter has now been captured. He or she was found in Helsinki side, so a little bit further from the actual school. The shooter had a handgun that was registered for a close relative, police says. We don't know to whom. And if I quote the police, shooter was captured calmly. Police is now investigating this as a murder and attempted murder case.
Satu, what can you tell us about the school where this happened?
Well, it's called Viertola School, that is located in Vantaa, which is around 20-minute drive from the capital, Helsinki. So it's a very close neighbor. It has 800 pupils. They are between the ages of 7 and 16. It has around 90 people staff. Besides like normal school functions, it offers language baths in Swedish and also education for disabled people.
And what has been the reaction from parents and from politicians?
Well, all the ministers involved have commented just recently this case, and they described this as a tragedy, of course. Prime Minister Petteri Orpo said he was speechless. He noted that this was a horrible story that needs to be truly investigated. He also noted that there are too many young people suffering from mental health issues here in Finland. But police has added that there are different types of threats at schools by weekly basis, which is too much. And even as, go on.
Satu, lots of people in Finland own guns. Are school shootings very unusual in Finland?
Well, the latest official school shooting we had 2008. So it's definitely rare. But as police says, said that there are threats towards schools much more often. So there is a lot of prevention, but that the thing that is actually happened is rare and devastating and horrible.
Satu Helen, journalist with YLE Media based in Helsinki. Thank you very much for taking our call today. Back home, the price of groceries is still rising, but the pace of that rise is continuing to slow down. Dunnes Stores is still the most used supermarket in the country, and we spent a lot more on Easter eggs this year, 60% more than last Easter. Eimear Healy has been telling us more. She's a retail expert with Kantar. First, on the almost €25 million spent on Easter eggs.
I suppose Easter really hits the shelves earlier, it feels like, every year. So it's probably of no surprise that Irish consumers really have been stocking up on some classic kind of seasonal treats. So what we saw, Gavin, during the month of March, it was that nearly half of the Irish household population actually purchased Easter eggs. And during that month of March, shoppers actually spent a mammoth 24.6 million on Easter eggs, which was an additional 9 million versus last year. However, it wasn't only chocolate, and we did see many opting for the likes of hot cross buns, and 1.1 million was spent during the month of March on those as well.
Eimear, a 60% increase in spend on Easter eggs. Now, either they've got very expensive or we've suddenly developed a very sweet tooth all of a sudden. What happened?
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose our data is up until the 17th of March. So, you know, Easter was a little bit earlier this year as well. And we did see Easter eggs probably more in store and kind of on the shelves a little bit longer. But yeah, definitely Irish shoppers having a sweet tooth this Easter.
Half, I gather, of that value are eggs that were sold as part of promotions.
Yes, there was. So there was a lot of Easter eggs sold on promo. And when we see at a total grocery level, Gavin, 25% of our sales were coming through promotions. So yeah, Easter eggs were also heavily promoted over the course of March.
Prices are still rising, but inflation is falling, yes?
That's correct. Yeah, so we still see, I suppose, at a total grocery landscape, we see sales are up 4.5%, but we do see the average price per pack up 4%. So it is still very much prices are increasing, but we know that grocery price inflation has really been a main driver in the market of growth versus kind of that increase in spending. And what we saw, Gavin, over the latest 12 weeks, that inflation rose by 3.7%. So this is down significantly versus March of 2023, when inflation stood at 16%. But definitely some welcome news for consumers, as it's actually the 11th month in a row that we have seen a drop in inflation, and currently at its lowest level that we've seen in the latest 2 years.
And sales are increasing too.
They are. They are up 4.5% in the latest month. So 1.1 billion euro running through the tills in that month of March.
The analysis that you have, what does it tell us about where people are shopping?
Yeah, so we see, Gavin, shoppers really shopping around across retailers. And I suppose we know that shoppers are looking for the best value in the market and kind of looking for those retailers that are potentially offering good voucherings or club cards. But the data up until the 17th of March, we see that Dunnes is holding the number one spot at 24%, and is growing at 7.7% year on year. So that is followed then by Tesco at 22.8%, Supervalue at 20.4%, and then we have Lidl coming in at 13.5%, and then Aldi at 11.5%.
That's Eimear Healy from Kantar. A van set alight, masked men carrying milk crates of petrol bombs, one thrown at a journalist in Derry yesterday. The events have been condemned by politicians and the PSNI, who said the march was illegal. For more now, we're joined by Niall Deeney. He's Derry correspondent with Belfast Live. Niall, thanks for taking our call today.
Thanks for having me.
You were there. What happened?
Well, there was a parade and commemoration event organised by non-mainstream Republicans, people opposed to the peace process. The parade element hadn't been, to my understanding, notified adequately through the Parades Commission in the North here, and was therefore deemed illegal by the PSNI. The parade got underway shortly after 2 p.m. yesterday at the Craigan area of Derry City, and made its way to the city cemetery where the commemoration event had taken place. Shortly after the commemoration event, a crowd of people made their way out of the city cemetery into the Craigan area, and at that time there were large numbers of very young people, often mostly masked, many of whom were carrying petrol bombs, bricks and things like this. At a certain stage during the as the crowd were standing, there were fireworks and things thrown at a group of journalists, people who were very easily identifiable as journalists, carrying camera equipment and things like this. Eventually that began to escalate. I watched as a group of very young children arrived with petrol bombs. Some of the older masked youths, or I don't know what age they were, but I would guess either late teens or early 20s. One of them lifted a petrol bomb, lit it, and began to make towards this group of journalists. At that point, I decided to run down. These are people that I know, that I've worked with. At that stage, I decided to run down to warn them that things were escalating. And a petrol bomb was thrown directly and deliberately at my feet. I don't know whether that was done because I'm a journalist and I was identified as such, or whether that was done simply because I had warned the other group of journalists. That group of young people pursued this group of journalists and continued throwing petrol bombs. There was more than one thrown. I would estimate maybe 4, 5, or 6 petrol bombs were thrown in total, including the one thrown at my feet. Luckily, that particular group of journalists managed to escape unharmed. And that's what happened with Reagan yesterday.
Niall, did you get a chance? It sounds very scary, but did you get a chance to ask them why they were throwing petrol bombs at people, at journalists, at you?
I did, shortly before that incident, as the fireworks were being thrown at the journalists. I did ask one of the masked youths, why are you pursuing those people? And I wasn't given a coherent answer. Let's put it that way.
Were there police there?
There were no police in the area. There was a police helicopter circling overhead shortly before the parade element of the event got underway. A police drone had been blaring a message about the legal status of the parade, but there was no visible police presence from the PSNI on the ground whatsoever that I had seen.
What do you think would have happened if there were police there?
I believe that police have probably taken an operational decision to stay away from the area in the belief that had they arrived, they would have been attacked with the petrol bombs. And there were people, even before the event got underway, there were people with petrol bombs, and they appeared to be distributed amongst groups of masked youth.
How are you now? Are you okay?
I'm fine. A petrol bomb was thrown at my feet, and I don't believe it was thrown at my feet and an attempt to set me on fire. I think it was done to intimidate me. There were petrol bombs thrown at my colleagues, and I believe that that was more vicious, and I believe that those were attempts to cause serious harm to the other group of journalists that were being pursued. I'm fine. It was a scary event, I suppose. It was a quite a frightening experience. But I'm fine, and my thoughts are primarily with the group of journalists who were subjected more sinister attacks.
Niall, thank you very much for taking our call today. That's Niall Deeney, Derry correspondent with Belfast Live. More on the news at 1 after this break.
Ready to energise your future and push yourself to new heights? Then apply today for ESB Network's Electrical Apprenticeship Programme, where every day is different from the next, where you earn as you learn, while being part of a team working together towards one goal, to deliver Ireland's clean electric future. To apply to ESB Network's Electrical Apprenticeship Programme, visit esbnetworks.ie/apprenticeships. ESB Networks, energizing your everything.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why. The Euro Millions jackpot is an estimated 60 million euro. Play responsibly in store, in app, or at lottery.ie. The National Lottery. It could be you.
RTE Radio 1.
Kings of Leon are back. Live in Dublin. Can We Please Have Fun World Tour. Marley Park, Saturday, July 6th, subject to license. With special guest, The War on Drugs. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Kings of Leon. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back here with the news at one. Gas Networks Ireland have announced plans to connect Bordenham owners Edenderry power plant to its supply network. It will involve switching from the existing diesel power generators to natural gas and ultimately to renewable energy. The County Offaly plant supports the national energy grid at times of high demand. Gas Networks Ireland say the change will cut carbon emissions there by 40% by 2029. John Riley is head of renewable energy at Bordenham owner and joins us now. John Riley, good afternoon. Tell us, why are you doing this and what's the ultimate plan for this plant?
Good afternoon, Gavin, to you and your listeners. I suppose this is part of Bordenham owner's wider green energy investment program. And on the site today, the complex today, there's 250 megawatts of what we would call firm thermal capacity. About 130 megawatts of that is the old peat-fired boiler that has now been completely converted to run on 100% sustainable biomass. And this part of the program involves peaking capacity. That's capacity that is used to back up the weather-dependent renewables that we now have on the power system. And this peaking capacity currently runs on gas, oil or distillate. And part of the program here is to bring the GNI, the gas network, to the site to initially replace the distillate that's used on the site with natural gas and ultimately facilitate the decarbonisation of that gas by using biomethane, for example, or ultimately green hydrogen to take the fossil element of the gas out of the generation mix on the site.
But in the short term, it will be natural gas, which is still an emitter of greenhouse gases. That will be till the end of this decade, yes?
Yeah, give or take, Gavin. I think we'd like to think that between now and the end of the decade, if we can get the permission and get the pipeline constructed, that you will begin to see a blending. Gas Networks Ireland have a program. They're currently blending biomethane with the natural gas in the network, which is reducing the emissions intensity of that gas used. So we would expect that by the time we get to use the gas through the pipeline, there would be an element of decarbonised gas in that pipeline before the end of the decade.
This is part of the government's just transition policy where jobs are supposed to be replaced with new ones. How many new jobs have been created by Bordenham owner? How many clean jobs will this project create?
Well, if you look at what the just transition is about, it's about replacing, as you've said, jobs that were previously involved in the fossil fuel sector with jobs in, the greener jobs in the more sustainable economy. From our perspective in Bordenham owner, our renewable energy business has grown from, it has more than doubled in size. We've added about 150 employees to the business over the last 8 or 10 years. And we would expect to see those numbers double again. But I think what's more important here is rather than just employment that's created directly in Bordenham owner, it's the sort of the indirect employment that this type of energy infrastructure will create and provide. Ireland, for example, has a real opportunity to become one of the first countries in the world to achieve a net zero electric power system. And if we could do that ahead of other economies, I think it will provide enormous opportunities in terms of green manufacturing, for example. So these infrastructure elements are a crucial part of that transition.
John Riley, Head of Renewable Energy at Bordenham owner, thank you for speaking with us today.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Joanne Cantwell is here with today's sports news. Afternoon, Joanne.
Thank you, Gavin. Good afternoon. Just 3 days out from the Republic of Ireland's opening match over the Euro 2025 qualifiers, and we do have one confirmed absentee, although it is an expected one. Defender Niamh Fahey has been ruled out of Friday's Group A3 opener against France in Metz, and also next Tuesday's huge game at the Aviva Stadium against England. Now, Fahey had missed Liverpool's most recent games with a calf strain, but she did travel to Dublin to be assessed by the Ireland medical team. She has now left the squad and no player has been called up as replacement. And don't forget that both of Ireland's qualifiers are live on RTÉ2 television and radio commentary on Game On and 2FM. Tottenham could move back into the Premier League's top.